Good morning, and welcome to Greater Good. This is your volunteer reader, Babs Felix, from the Sun Sounds of Arizona Flagstaff Studios. The Greater Good Science Center studies the psychology, sociology, and neuroscience of well-being, and teaches skills that foster a thriving, resilient, and compassionate society. And now, some articles from Greater Good. How to help your loved ones stick to their goals. Want to help friends and family follow through on their New Year resolutions? Christine Carter has 7 tips for you. By Christine Carter, January 6th, 2025. If you've ever set a New Year's resolution, you know they can be hard to keep. Even when we're highly motivated at first, we humans often struggle to follow through on our best intentions. One thing that helps is having social support. But the type of support that actually helps is pretty specific. Unfortunately, supporters often accidentally and unknowingly hinder their loved ones' efforts to change instead of helping. Why? A significant component of whether or not we can maintain a change depends on our motivation. And our motivation depends on 3 things that psychologists consider basic psychological needs. First, our perception of our own competence, or our confidence that we can make the change. Understandably, if we don't feel capable of making the change, if we don't feel like we will ultimately be successful, we won't feel motivated to keep trying. Second, our sense of autonomy or independence. We humans resist behaviors that we feel subtly forced or shamed into making. If we feel like we have to keep our resolution or something bad will happen, like someone else will be disappointed in us or we'll have a heart attack, or our cancer will come back, we feel less motivated than if we feel like the behavior is based on our own choice or if it's something we want to do. This is complex and somewhat counterintuitive, but well understood by behavioral scientists. And third, our relatedness, or whether or not we feel accepted, valued, and supported by others. When a behavior helps us feel connected to others and increases our sense of belonging, for example, joining a running group to support our resolution to run a 10K, we feel more motivated to stick to the resolution. Even if one of these 3 core psychological needs is thwarted, our motivation will tank and our resolution is toast. So this year, if you have a loved one who wants to get into a new healthy habit or break an old one, here are 7 things that you can do to increase their odds of success. Number 1, support their autonomy. Show your person that you see them as fully capable of making their own choices and solving their problems. Help them build a vision for success, which will help them to focus on what they want, not what they don't. What does success look like? How are they hoping to feel? What will they need to do to succeed? When will they need to ask for help? What's their plan for today? 2. Encourage their competence by expressing your confidence in their ability to make the change or keep the resolution, and by finding ways to boost their confidence in their capability. Ask about and point to instances where they've successfully done something similar. 3. Foster relatedness. By forming a special relationship with them around their resolution, offer to be their partner in this thing. But don't assume you know what kind of support they need. Ask them how you can best support them. What would help? What would feel good? For example, my daughter Macy recently asked me not to remind her to exercise, but instead to remind her how good she feels when she does exercise. The goal here isn't to get them to do the thing, it's to show them that they are not alone. 4. Promote mindful self-awareness through daily check-ins. This is not about being an accountability partner, which can feel yucky to many people. We don't want them to start avoiding you in your efforts to support them, so it's not about pestering them with, "Did you do it?" or incessantly reminding them to do what they said that they would do. It's about sharing a "How did it go today?" moment. The goal is to drive self-awareness in a non-judgmental way. It's hard to keep a resolution if we aren't aware of what influences our behavior. It can help to have some prompt self-reflection with "what" or "how" questions. For example, "How are you feeling about that?" or "What do you want to do tomorrow?" Try not to ask "why" questions. For example, "Why do you think you were on your phone so late last night?" which can prompt defensiveness. "Why" questions can be perceived as criticism, making people want to explain or justify their actions. And the more someone defends an action or belief, the more committed to it they become. So when we ask "why" about something that didn't go well, we unintentionally strengthen their resolve in the wrong direction. This is not what we are after. Instead, try inviting self-reflection in a low pressure way. Like, "Can you say more about what led up to that?" or focusing on the decision making versus the action. "How did you decide to skip a day?" Daily check-ins help with relatedness, of course. They can also provoke something called the Hawthorne effect, a phenomenon where sometimes people change their behavior for the better when they are being observed. What we're ultimately doing here is helping people observe their own behavior. 5. Offer compassion, especially when things aren't going well. It won't feel good when our person stumbles in their resolution, which they will. We don't want them to give up just so that they don't have to feel bad when they stumble again, which they will. We can make their stumble feel less bad by giving them a soft place to land and a safe place to be vulnerable. Ask them how they feel and validate their feelings. For example, People all over the world feel like you right now in this situation. Remind them that the important thing is that they are in the arena, playing their own game. They don't need to be perfect. Perfect isn't even possible. 6. Don't offer solutions, even when you really think they will help. Even if you are pretty sure you know the answer to a problem they are facing, do not, for the love of God, offer it. Don't tell them what they should do. In other words, don't should on them. Don't rob them of the satisfaction of solving their own problems. I know, this is hard. Many resolutions require a high degree of knowledge. Knowledge that you have. For example, say your loved one wants to maintain a ketogenic diet. This requires an understanding of macronutrients, meal planning, and cooking. Maybe you know a lot about these things. Before you offer help, please ask them, do they want you to teach them what you know? Share recipes on websites that you found helpful? No. If they don't want your help, let it go. You risk thwarting your loved one's autonomy and sense of competence. Your intentions are all good, but they won't help and they might hurt. 7. Cheerlead your heart out when they do have some success. Researchers note that happy couples actively celebrate when their partner shares good news. So when your person shares a success with you, however minor, respond enthusiastically. It isn't enough to be positive and loving, but not particularly emotive. Your response to good news needs to be active. Silent support is far less effective. Enthusiastic responses are important, even if you don't know the person you are supporting well. Having someone who says, "I'm really happy for you," can make a person feel even better about the event or news that they are sharing and put them in a better mood. In addition, enthusiastic feedback leads to greater closeness, trust, and intimacy with you, their supporter. That's not nothing. Even if you aren't sure the person you are supporting will maintain the changes they are making, or if you aren't sure how important those changes are, your support is meaningful. You're helping someone you love feel good and bolstering your relationship in the process. About the author, Christine Carter, PhD, is a senior fellow at the Greater Good Science Center. She is the author of The New Adolescence, Raising Happy and Successful Teens in an Age of Anxiety and Distraction. The Sweet Spot, How to Accomplish More by Doing Less, and Raising Happiness, 10 Simple Steps for More Joyful Kids and Happier Parents. A former director of the Greater Good Science Center, she served for many years as author of its parenting blog, Raising Happiness. You are listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona in Flagstaff, bringing you Greater Good Magazine. And here's another article. Are humans meant to share beds? Here's what research says about the benefits and drawbacks of sleeping alongside your kids and partners. By Jeffrey Dina Spano and Gina Mason, January 13, 2025. Recent research on animal sleep behavior has revealed that sleep is influenced by the animals around them. Olive baboons, for instance, sleep less as group sizes increase, while mice can synchronize their rapid eye movement cycles. In Western society, many people expect to sleep alone, if not with a romantic partner. But as with other group living animals, human co-sleeping is common, despite some cultural and age-related variation. And in many cultures, bed sharing with a relative is considered typical. Apart from Western countries, caregiver-infant co-sleeping is common, with rates as high as 60 to 100% in parts of South America, Asia, and Africa. Despite its prevalence, infant co-sleeping is controversial. Some Western perspectives that value self-reliance argue that sleeping alone promotes self-soothing when the baby wakes in the night. But evolutionary scientists argue that co-sleeping has been important to help keep infants warm and safe throughout human existence. Many cultures do not expect babies to self-soothe when they wake in the night and see night wakings as a normal part of breastfeeding and development. Concerns about sudden infant death syndrome, or SIDS, have often led pediatricians to discourage bed sharing. However, when studies control for other SIDS risk factors, including unsafe sleeping surfaces, SIDS risk does not seem to differ statistically between co-sleeping and solitary sleeping infants. This may be one reason why agencies such as the American Academy of Pediatrics, the National Institute for Health and Care Excellence, and the NHS recommend that infants either sleep in the parent's room close to the parent's bed but on a separate surface, or if bed sharing, sleep on a firm, flat mattress without pillows and duvets rather than discouraging co-sleeping altogether. Researchers don't yet know whether co-sleeping causes differences in sleep or whether co-sleeping happens because of these differences. However, experiments in the 1990s suggested that co-sleeping can encourage more sustained and frequent bouts of breastfeeding. Using sensors to measure brain activity, this research also suggested that infants and caregivers' sleep may be lighter during co-sleeping. But researchers speculated that this lighter sleep may actually help protect against SIDS by providing infants more opportunities to rouse from sleep and develop better control over their respiratory system. Other advocates believe that co-sleeping benefits infants' emotional and mental health by promoting parent-child bonding and aiding infants' stress hormone regulation. However, current data is inconclusive, with most studies showing mixed findings or no differences between co-sleepers and solitary sleepers with respect to short and long-term mental health. Co-sleeping in childhood. Childhood co-sleeping past infancy is also fairly common, according to worldwide surveys. A 2010 survey of over 7,000 UK families found 6% of children were constant bed sharers up to at least 4 years old. Some families adopt co-sleeping in response to their child having trouble sleeping, but parent-child bed sharing in many countries, including some Western countries like Sweden, where children often co-sleep with parents until school age, is viewed culturally as part of a nurturing environment. It is also common for siblings to share a room or even a bed. A 2021 U.S. study found that over 36% of young children aged 3 to 5 years bed shared in some form overnight, whether with caregivers, siblings, pets, or some combination. Co-sleeping decreases but is still present among older children, with up to 13.8% of co-sleeping parents in Australia, the UK, and other countries reporting that their child was between 5 and 12 years old when they engaged in co-sleeping. Two recent U.S. studies using wrist-worn actigraphs, or motion sensors, to track sleep indicated that kids who bed share may have shorter sleep durations than children who sleep alone. But this shorter sleep duration is not explained by greater disruption during sleep. Instead, bed sharing children may lose sleep by going to bed later than solitary sleepers. Benefits and downsides of co-sleeping may also differ in children with conditions such as autism spectrum disorder, mental health disorders, and chronic illnesses. These children may experience heightened anxiety, sensory sensitivities, and physical discomfort that make falling and staying asleep difficult. For them, co-sleeping can provide reassurance. Adults sharing beds. According to a 2018 survey from the U.S. National Sleep Foundation, 80 to 89% of adults who sleep with their significant other share a bed with them. Adult bed sharing has shifted over time from pre-industrial communal arrangements, including whole families and other household guests, to solo sleeping in response to hygiene concerns as germ theory became accepted. Many couples find that bed sharing boosts their sense of closeness. Research shows that bed sharing with your partner can lead to longer sleep times and a feeling of better sleep overall. Bed sharing couples also often get into sync with each other's sleep stages, which can enhance that feeling of intimacy. However, it's not all rosy. Some studies indicate that females in heterosexual relationships may struggle more with sleep quality when bed sharing, as they can be more easily disturbed by their male partner's movements. Also, bed sharers can have less deep sleep when sleeping alone, even though they feel like their sleep is better together. Many questions about co-sleeping remain unanswered. For instance, we don't fully understand the developmental effects of co-sleeping on children or the benefits of co-sleeping for adults beyond male-female romantic partners. But some work suggests that co-sleeping can comfort us, similar to other forms of social contact, and help to enhance physical synchrony between parents and children. Co-sleeping doesn't have a one-size-fits-all answer, but remember that Western norms aren't necessarily the ones we have evolved with. So, consider factors such as sleep disorders, health, and age in your decision to co-sleep rather than what everyone else is doing. About the authors. Jeffrey Dina Spano, PhD, is a lecturer in developmental cognitive neuroscience at Kingston University. Gina Mason, PhD, is a postdoctoral research fellow in psychiatry and human behavior at Brown University. You have been listening to Greater Good Magazine, brought to you by Sun Sounds of Arizona in Flagstaff. This is your volunteer reader, Babs Felix, wishing you a wonderful rest of your day, and thank you so much for listening today. And now, stay tuned for more interesting programming coming to you from Sun Sounds of Arizona.